Hey, Lucinda, Bill Hogue.
Hey, Bill, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. How about you?
I'm good. I'm very good.
Oh, good. Well, Lucinda, just to get us started, maybe you could spend a minute or two talking about who you are today and where you came from over the course of your career. Just a little recap. Your profile is a good comprehensive one on the EDUCAUSE website, but there may be people who listen to this who aren't fully familiar with your background or you, and so a brief synopsis would help set the stage.
I'll be glad to do that. First of all, thanks for the opportunity to do this, and I think it is an important thing, and I'm really thankful for the two of you and taking this on, as we've been saying, with all that you have to do. But I think it is an important thing for the profession, and so I'm very glad to see that this is being done, and I was happy to participate in any way I could. I'm Lucinda Lee. I am Vice President for Information Technology and CIO at Middle Tennessee State University. I guess in the profession, I am certainly something of an anomaly. Not many people that are now CIOs probably have been at the same place 30-plus years. And I started when I was 8 years old, of course. But I started my career, let me go back, I guess, to college first. I was a math major in the mid to late 60s, you know, before there were many, or if any, computer science majors and that sort of thing out there. I'd always just loved math, enjoyed it, and that's what I wanted to do. But I was kind of a little bit different kind of person in that field, and also being a woman, and that I didn't want to teach. That was not really what I thought I wanted to do career-wise. I just enjoyed math, and that's how come I majored in it, and I was hoping I could find something to do to relate to that in some way. I took one course as an undergrad. I did my undergrad work in 3 years, and I took one course in symbolic programming on an IBM 1620, and to be quite honest, I really didn't even like it very much. But nevertheless, not wanting to teach and being in the position to look for employment, and newly married, and having decided that my husband was going to, who had a master's in math, was going to pursue a PhD and didn't want to teach, needed to be a breadwinner, I guess. And so I was looking for programming jobs, which in the late 60s was not a bad thing to be doing, and was looking in terms of places that he was going to go for graduate work, and had interviewed, you know, Alcoa at Pittsburgh because he was looking at Carnegie Mellon, and NASA in Houston because he was looking at the University of Houston. Well, he decided to go to LSU because of the program they had and his interest. And so it turned out I hadn't interviewed anybody there, but it was not a bad place to be job hunting in the programming area in those days with all the oil and chemical companies and so forth. And so I had offers to go in programming there and interviewed at LSU and ended up going there and starting my career there as a systems programmer. It was a great experience, really. I guess as much as anything, let me know that I did want to be in this field, and I'm talking the programming environment in general. And also let me know that I very much liked being in the higher education environment, pursuing that kind of career. I loved it, loved the higher ed environment. The person that I would consider my first mentor, a guy named Bill Townsend, who had started the computer center basically there, one of those kinds of PhD mathematicians who started them all around the country. He was very much a person that gave you an opportunity to do a job and let you go for it, and that was it, and believed that you could do whatever he needed you to do. So it was a great thing. Following along, again, this is sort of a dual career path kind of scenario, but with my husband looking for jobs, we determined we were going to be moving back to the Middle Tennessee area because of family, and that's what we wanted to do. And so he was coming to MTSU, and I was coming to MTSU as well. There was a very small computing department here, it was actually data processing. You know, that's what it was in those days. And at a school like MTSU, a state regional university, or actually just changing over from being a state college to a state university about that time. So, you know, there wasn't really much sophisticated systems programming going on, or certainly no academic programming of any kind, any academic computing and that kind of thing. So I decided that I would pursue my master's, which is something I wanted to do. And again, that was in mathematics. And I sort of started a tradition here that was then called the equivalent of a graduate assistantship. But they didn't have, you know, they had graduate teaching assistantships, but they did not have graduate assistantships where you were working in an area doing something other than teaching. So they sort of started that with me, I guess, and I was doing that in the computer center as I did my master's degree. And about that time, we got an old GE time-sharing system that could allow for 20 users. And this was in the early 70s. And so I ended up doing my thesis on numerical quadrature and did it on an old Porticom computer, which was not a desktop. It was really, I guess, a forerunner of the laptops today. But that was interesting, and I loved it, and, you know, there you go. Once got my master's degree, and actually then a half-time position was formed for me here that was called a faculty liaison thing. And so, in effect, I started academic computing at MTSU doing that. Did that for a few years. That was, by this time, I was not just a wife, but I was also a mother. And that was a great time for me. I could work half-time and, you know, keep my feet wet in the profession and do some things here at MTSU. And also be a mother to young children. So did that, and will always be grateful for the opportunity that was provided at that time for me. Started academic computing and then was asked to go into a full-time position. And really, most of that was in academic computing, and it was about statistical computing. And I was mostly doing statistical research for faculty and statistical computing for them at that point in time. Also, all along I had done some adjunct teaching, even though I'd said I didn't want to teach. Even at LSU, again, no computer science department there in those days, but I think it was out of chemical engineering that I was teaching Fortran and some of those things. So I did the same thing here in both the computer science department that was formed in the mid to late 70s, and then in the computer information systems department, which is in the College of Business. So I did those, which gave me a great, you know, even though I didn't want to teach, as I said, it gave me a great, I think, insight into what it was to be faculty and to have a much better understanding of where faculty were coming from, their expectations and their needs. And then I think I've also had another insight into higher education computing here in that I was married to faculty all these years. You know, I've sort of laughed and joked and said, well, I kind of understand them. And that helps. So anyway, did the whole thing for a number of years. Academic computing at MTSU didn't have a lot of rights and responsibilities in that sense of the word for a long time. It was certainly a stepchild. There were a number of faculty that got very upset about that and unhappy as computer science was becoming stronger and as some other areas were becoming stronger. And in the early 90s, there was even a deal where, and I had developed something of a staff by this time, but still very minimal, but there was a deal where a group of our faculty even, you know, protested resolutions to the faculty senate, et cetera, you know, academic computing has got to be strong, you know, we want Lucinda Lee to head up academic computing and have our own hardware and, you know, all of this good stuff. Interesting story because, you know, it was all about just this little bit of administrative computing that the administration wanted to have happen. And that was back in the days when BitNet was there before the Internet, and I wanted to do some things with BitNet and was told in no uncertain terms, you know, stop talking about that. That's not going to be allowed at MTSU, and et cetera. So anyway, that's kind of some of the history of that. What happened was that a new vice president came in who saw that there were real problems with this whole academic computing situation, but also had the understanding to know that it probably wasn't the best thing to separate out academic and administrative computing. And so I was called in one day for what I did not know was going to be an interview, and it turned out I spent about 2 hours in this person's office, and it, I guess, was an interview. I had not even been allowed to talk to this new vice president before that. And he called me in, and we talked, and at the end of that 2 hours, there was a new Office of Information Technology formed, and I was asked to lead it and to become the director of the Office of Information Technology at that time.
That's a pretty persuasive interview.
It was. It was very interesting.
Very impressive.
And it was about keeping academic and administrative computing together, but forming this new, you know, entity. I also was given telecommunications. Later, I was given the campus ID system and you know, lots of things like that. So,
approximately when was that, Lucinda?
This was, this office was formed, I became director in July 93. Now, and there were, the first year was pretty hairy, and that's the reason I gave you this history. There was that element of the faculty who weren't exactly happy with that decision because they wanted their own academic computing. And we survived some interesting times that. And, I mean, they had been very supportive of me and wanted me to head it up. But then I'd gone to the other side. So it was an interesting year, but we got through it and I think did a lot of good things and showed that group of faculty, you know, where our interests were and what we intended to do and how academic computing was going to be very important henceforth at MTSU and so forth and so on. And so we came out on top, and that has sort of been the story. And what I did in those first years was really build the organization. There were positions that were in the old computer center that weren't even being utilized. Really wasn't given a lot of new money, but there was enough laying around not being used, quite frankly, that I was able to accomplish a lot because of the flexibility and the latitude I had to do some things with what was already there. And you know, we did things to show the faculty, like, you know, I immediately started the whole master classroom concept, technology in the classroom, was given money to do those first classrooms, was told if, you know, you can have the money to do a classroom in each college, if you can get the dean to give you a classroom to do this with. So, you know, went out, talked with the deans, had no problem with that, got it, and we started on that whole endeavor as part of that, and the whole instructional technology piece. We set aside $50,000 to start doing grants with faculty to, you know, let them make proposals and show what they might be able to do with particular classes, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, there were a lot of things like that we did, and it was a fun time. It was great. We also built out the network. There really was basically, as I said, no network. And, you know, we were able to persuade folks to give us the money to do that and so on and so on. So that was lots of fun. In the fall, August, I guess, really, of 2001, we had a new president come on board. That new president very much had been in other situations where he understood definitely the importance of technology to an institution and understood the integral importance of it to an institution. I think understood very much that it wasn't just an additive. And he knew me, something of my work. He had been in our system. And again, I was called in and asked to form a new division, to become a vice president and CIO, and to be a member of the cabinet to report directly to the president. So that all happened in February 2002, and so we've just passed our four-year anniversary on that. And, again, been lots of fun. And, you know, talking about me and my career, I guess, you know, I haven't moved in all these years now, but I guess there's been enough change for me and what I was doing that it has stayed interesting and stimulating. And I guess I've always been able to continue to be creative and to have new challenges and to look for new opportunities. And I think that, you know, is a very important component to success in leadership. I think sometimes people may have leadership capability and qualities, but they do get in situations where, you know, they're not given the opportunity for growth and both growth personally and for their institution or whatever. And so I think that's been real important, a real key thing for me in my career, because as I said earlier, I'm definitely an anomaly in the IT profession in higher ed, in IT profession period, I guess. So going back, I was looking at some of the questions that you all had put forth earlier. You know, I guess this concept of being a leader, I thought about that a lot. I thought about it over the last several years, especially a whole lot. I think that there are a lot of things that can be learned about leading, being a leader, and you know, certainly new things we can always pick up and do. But I guess my philosophy is basically you either have it or you don't have it to a large extent. And I'm not saying that it's all necessarily genetics. It may be environment. I think I was sort of prepped for being a leader maybe all along. I'm female. I'm an only child. I had parents who believed in education very strongly. My father was not an educated man, but had more common sense than anybody I've ever known. My mother had a college education and taught school. Both of them believed in education strongly, and I was always told I could do whatever I wanted to do. So I think there's a lot to, you know, maybe how you've been led to feel about yourself and those kind of things. And so, you know, I think I was always a leader. I was a leader in school. I was valedictorian of my high school class, et cetera, et cetera. I guess I've always believed it. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough that I was given the opportunity to exercise that belief, I guess.
Lucinda, when you think about that set of topics that you just talked about, leadership, and you've mentioned earlier, I think the name was Bill Townsend as an early mentor.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure there have been other mentors along the way as well, and I know for certain that you yourself have been a mentor to others in the profession. Is there something that, from a mentoring standpoint, either when you are the one being mentored or when you are the mentor, that can be done in the inside the confines of that relationship to reinforce or catalyze or stimulate leadership qualities, in your opinion?
I do. I'm not sure in my case. You know, it was never said to me, I'm going to be a mentor to you. And I don't know. I know, Bill, you've had experiences. Perhaps you have as well, David, but there's been some intentional set goals about some things like that. I would say for me there have been three men, the Bill Townsend I mentioned and Dwayne Stuckey, who's the person who made me director of that Office of Information Technology, and then currently our president, Sidney McPhee. I think with all three of those, for me, it was more about a consciousness of these people are top in their profession. These people have done some pretty significant things. There's a lot I can learn here. So I think it was about an openness to learning, a willingness to be observant, to watch closely, to not be so caught up in myself that, you know, I know much of anything about anything. The older I get, the more I know, the less I know. But to be open and to be understanding. And I sense that going the other way, too, because you're right, Bill. I mean, I do consciously want to mentor to people, you know, whatever talent I have, I think it's important to share. But I don't think you can say, or at least I've not observed that you can say directly to somebody, well, you know, I'm going to spend this year mentoring you. I think it's more a state of being, and I think that person has to recognize those things that they can pick up and that they can observe and be willing to ask questions and be willing to say, you know, I've noticed that this is the way you handle this. Why did you do it this way, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's all about relationships, and it's about being cognizant of the value of those relationships on many levels.
So it's more of an informal process for you than a formal process.
Yes. And I'm not saying the other can't happen at all, and that there's not a valuable thing. One of the questions that you all had thrown out was about books, people who, you know, I've studied or read, and that kind of thing. You know, I guess there's been quite a bit of that over the years. You know, I've tried to take people here to some trainings on that a little bit. And we've done retreats, and we've brought, you know, some specialists in to talk about team building, to talk about, you know, communication, all of these kinds of things, and I think that's very, very important. I don't have any special thing or book or anything like that I would say has been especially important to me. For me, it's been about, I guess, where I've been in life and the people I've been around and the wonderful qualities that I've observed that a lot of those people have. And then being, you know, open to emulating some of that sort of thing and trying to develop that in myself.
Listen, let me use that as a bit of a segue to go back to something that you said earlier and ask you for clarification.
Sure.
When you said that you thought a lot of leadership was inherent within the individual, it's something that you have or you don't have,
mm-hmm.
What do you think are some of the most important qualities of a leader or characteristics of a leader? And I'll extend that and say, if you know, you've hired and chosen leaders, people to work for you that were very important to your success in the past, what things do you look for in those people?
Well, first of all, just in hiring people in the IT profession, I look for intelligence, not necessarily so concerned about specific skills, though sometimes that is important, and those do enter into the job descriptions, and you have to know about that. But I am very much interested in just basic intelligence. You know, one of my standard questions on an interview is, what was your undergraduate GPA? And that's not to say that, you know, I'm not going to hire somebody who's got a GPA under 3.0 out of 4 or something. But, you know, I use that and gauge that with everything. And I want people who can think. That's key in this profession, key in most professions, I think. I am interested in people who are committed. I think one of the reasons, quite frankly, for whatever success I have had is I believe I can honestly say that I have never made a decision for something here at MTSU that wasn't being made because I thought it was in the best interest of MTSU. It had nothing to do with Lucinda Lee and where it might get me or not get me. I have never made decisions professionally in that regard about that. So I guess in looking back at the span of my career and how I've gotten where I've gotten, you know, it's never been consciously looking for the next leadership position. And I have not made decisions in that regard. I believe in my institution, and I believe in higher education. I believe in education, period. And I think for me that's been, you know, the foremost thing out there. So I do look for people that are committed, that are interested in being here because they want to be here and because of what they might bring to the particular job. But I look for them to, you know, have investigated our institution, to know something about it, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's very important. I also am very interested in people, and I think this is really key as we're talking about progressive IT leadership, that are cognizant of the big picture. I think too often, too many technical people get zeroed in on their little specific piece. And I think that the big picture is so important. And, again, I think that's one of the reasons for my success here at MTSU is I think I do have a pretty good understanding of higher education in general and specifically of this institution and what all it takes to make it go. And I think, quite frankly, it was very easy for me to go from a role of director and then assistant vice president. I left out one level. I had been made assistant vice president back in 99, but still didn't report to the president. I was reporting to a vice president. But I think that when I became vice president, because I understood that big picture, it made it much easier for me to fit into that cabinet role, to become one with the other vice presidents. Now, in general, this is not about leadership, but just talking about, you know, where IT fits in the higher ed organization. Even I was surprised at how much difference it made for me and what I was able to do with technology here, being at the VP level, being one of their colleagues now. It's just been incredible how much difference that makes. And I thought it was pretty great before, but it really is a big change. I think in general, you know, I'm looking for somebody that does know something, understands something about the academy. And so, yeah, I'll look way beyond those technical skills. They're important. In talking about leadership, and, you know, there's a lot of discussion now about pulling in IT leaders from other areas and maybe not necessarily totally even that people that know that much about IT, but just have been leading in other ways. I do think it's important that someone like the three of us has enough technical background. And I'll use another one of those sayings. Maybe this is just from the South. I don't know. But technical enough so that nobody's going to pull the wool over my eyes. And, you know, I can totally dig in and understand, okay, why this may or may not need to be done and that kind of thing. So I think, you know, that balance is so important. Be technical enough so you have that understanding and you can make the decisions you need to make. But you've got to make those decisions in terms of thinking about everything else that's going on in the university as well. And for some people, that's a pretty tough leap to make. I guess my other thing is that I've already talked about open-mindedness, and I think that's important. But the other thing would be passionate. When I was being recommended by the president to become a vice president and CIO, one of the things that he told me, he told the chancellor of our system in making that recommendation, because there hadn't been a search or another, you know, in-depth interview process of that kind or anything. He told me that he told the chancellor, Lucinda Lee is one of the most passionate people about what's happening here at MTSU of anybody I've encountered. And that's important. And I think that's important for anybody. Be engaged and love what you do, so forth.
Lucinda, when you think about younger people that you are mentoring now, or even if you're not in a mentoring relationship, you observe them at regional or national meetings, or perhaps they exist on your own campus, somebody, let's say, who's fairly junior in their career, mm-hmm. in their late 20s on up, who maybe has what it takes, both in terms of motivation and desire, as well as the commitment and the intelligence that you talked about and the passion to be a CIO. What do you imagine, if any, the skills will be that are required 15 or 20 years hence that maybe we're not called upon to demonstrate in quite the same degree? I guess what I'm getting at is it's not quite the same job that it would have been in 1985. So presumably there are going to be further changes as we go out into the future.
Well, I think that's, you know, asking a whole lot because, I mean, who knows what it's going to be like
sure.
out there. I think there are some things, I talked about that open-mindedness, and I think it's true today, but I think it's going to be much more true in the future. We don't even know what the academy is going to look like. So I think people have got to be probably even more visionary than, you know, we're trying to pull off today. And I think part of that vision has got to include huge capacity to be flexible, to be extremely flexible. I think as rapidly today as we're seeing change and how quickly we need to move and you know, redefine jobs and adapt to new things as they're coming along. I guess the saying goes, I don't think we've seen anything yet, and I think that's going to be be key, is the leadership capacity to have all these other qualities we've been talking about, but very much the capability to make even more instant decisions than we're making now. And I think, therefore, because of that, probably the depth of knowledge maybe is going to have to be much greater and much more depth and more breadth, I would say, and people's understanding of how all of this is going to work in the world and understanding it globally. So I think those would be what I would zero in on, is that capability to be very flexible, to be able to draw conclusions quickly, to be able to have the status and stature, I guess, in the organization to influence others to move quickly also, because I think IT is going to continue to drive a lot of change. And even though for a time it may continue to be very subtle, as I think it has been and somewhat continues to be, it's still going to be a driver. It's going to be there and very important. I think IT people are going to be key leaders in the future in the institution, not just a leader, but even more key. And what I'm saying there is maybe even more important than the VP for business and finance, or maybe as important, if not more important, than the provost, because I think delivery is going to be so important in the future, and delivery very different than most of us are doing a lot of it today.
Excellent observation.
Who knows?
If you were out on the job market, and I know you've described yourself as a bit of an anomaly, being someone who has stayed with one institution for the length of time you have, but if you were in the job market, without unduly flattering you, I think it would be safe to say that your resume would float toward the top of most search pools.
Thank you.
Talk a little bit, if you would, about imagining yourself in that situation. How important is it to have the kinds of regional and national visibility that you have had? You've obviously been extremely active in EDUCAUSE. You host a conference at MTSU. You're a big contributor to the profession. What can we say to our colleagues who will be following along behind us about what value one can derive from those kinds of activities?
Thank you, Bill, for asking that, because I hadn't touched on that at all. Earlier when I said, no, I couldn't say there was one book or one periodical or one essay that did whatever, I was very sincere about that. But I think and this is something else I hadn't touched on, that I think is a key component of being a leader in any capacity, in any profession, but certainly in IT, is you've got to be involved. And you've got to be involved at a higher level than your institution or even your state if you're going to even understand what all is happening and how it's affecting you and what you're doing and so forth and so on. If there is one key thing that I could say that I think has played very importantly for me as I have developed in my profession, it is the involvement at that professional level with EDUCAUSE, and I've done other things with teaching, learning, technology, roundtable, syllabus, campus technology, been on the editorial boards for some publications and things like that as well, and I've done some speaking and all that. So, it's not just EDUCAUSE, though EDUCAUSE I think is premier in all of this. But all of that has been key. And it's been key, I would say this, this is one of the things I try to mentor with my own direct reports here of how important that is, not just because of what I was saying about just knowing what's going on and being able to make decisions that are appropriate in the context of the day and the time, but also in just my own personal development you can't do any of this in a vacuum. And it's been interesting because I have observed in my own state a lot of that, you know, just kind of doing things out there in a vacuum and trying to lead and survive. And it's just not effective. It doesn't work. You know, I guess there's one thing that I also believe about leaders. You got to put yourself out there. You know, I didn't aspire to be the program chair for the EDUCAUSE conference. And I didn't aspire to be on the EDUCAUSE board. I never dreamed that that would be something that would happen. But I think I put myself out there. I've been involved. People have known that I am passionate. People know that I care. People know that maybe I do think halfway logically and have some decent things to say at times. So, you know, it's that awareness. I mean, you know, unto ourselves we can't do anything, and it's that availability that I've made of the larger community that has been so important. I mean, you know, it's so valuable for me to sit here at my desk and know that I can pick up the phone or I can email or whatever. By the way, this is probably not a good thing to say on this interview, but lots of times I would prefer to pick up the phone. I would rather talk with you than email back and forth. But to know that I could do those things, and that I've got people all around the country that I can talk to if I had an issue or a problem, I mean, or just something I wanted to bounce off somebody, there are any number of people that I could do that with, and, you know, that's invaluable. And you don't get that in the book. You don't pay for that. You get that by investing yourself. And I think that, you know, that's one of the major messages I try to give to my folks is it's about investing yourself. It's about putting yourself out there. And, you know, there may be times when you don't look really good. You know, there may be times when you look a little stupid. That's okay, too. That doesn't bother me. Why does that have to bother anybody? You know, has that not happened to anybody at one point in time or another? I guess another thing that I always talk to folks about in that regard is it never bothers me to say I don't know either. Because as I said earlier, there's a lot of stuff I don't know. And I think a lot of times that's a leadership void that some people have. You know, they think they know everything and they have to go with it. But getting back to the professional development, Bill and David, so important, and I think so important for anybody today to engage themselves in.
Lucinda, you seem to be, and in fact I think you're known for being a very humble and self-effacing kind of a person. Would you care to speak about that?
Well, I think humility is good for all of us. And I guess that just sort of goes to what I was just saying. I do think people have problems with letting somebody else know that they don't know something. You know, I personally feel like that it makes my team stronger when I can say to them, I don't know about this. I need you to educate me on all the pros and cons about this issue, you know, and if I know anything about it, I can bring that in, or I can say, or I can play the devil's advocate, or I can do whatever that I need to do. But, you know, not only have I let them know that I don't know everything, but I have given them an opportunity to then share their knowledge. I have boosted them in that regard. And so that's very important in building a team and very important in developing, I think, leadership in others. And I think that to do that, you have to have a certain degree of humility.
This is sort of a trivial question compared to the one that David just posed, but if you were being roasted just prior to your retirement by people who know you best, would they cite any sayings or aphorisms that they get sick of hearing Lucinda Lee say? In my own organization, I know people would say, we've heard him say 1,000 times, keeping the trains running on time is necessary but not sufficient, and they get sick of it. So I now preface the remark by saying, I know you're sick of hearing this, but Do you use similar things to try to illustrate basic points that you think are important for people to internalize?
Well, I say a lot, do what you say, you know, which is another way of saying walk the talk. I think that's really important. And I also, I guess, say a lot. I don't have any fancy one like you just said, Bill, but just in plain words, you know, I really say what you mean. You know, don't beat around the bush with me. Get out with it. Let me know what the facts are. So I would probably be known for saying that a whole lot. Also, I guess say quite a bit, you know, the buck does stop here. Therefore, and what I'm saying to others to let them help them to understand why sometimes I need to know something is because the whole team does need to be aware of what's going on. And when no one individual operates in a vacuum. And, you know, it's so important that I'm informed. I'm not a micromanager, but I do need to be informed. I think the most important thing I do for my president is I keep him informed of issues that I'm certain he needs to know about, and I don't take him the trivial matters. And by that same token, I expect my reports to do the same for me, and I try to help them understand why that's important by saying, you know, I'm the one that's going to get called on the carpet. I need to know what's going on. So they would probably say that they hear me saying that quite a bit.
Yeah, if I pick a variation on the same theme that you just sounded, I tell folks frequently that if this decision blows up, you're not the one who's going to be on the front page of the local newspaper. I am.
Yeah, well, we got hacked last May, and I was, of course, we're in Murfreesboro, 30 miles out of Nashville, but I was on three TV stations in Nashville that night. So I frequently am coming back and saying, and I don't want to be on Channel 4 or Fox or whatever.
I share your sentiment wholeheartedly.
Right.
Yeah, I just told my folks last week, look, if you want me to have your back, you have to have mine.
Exactly.
To go just a little further with that same question that Bill asked, and that's an excellent question. If you had one thing that you could say to someone, you know, as they're leaving on the train, so to speak, to use Bill's thing, but, you know, just one thing that you could pass on to someone as your bit of wisdom that you could give them, only one thing, and it was one of those, whatever you do, don't forget this, what would it be?
I think it goes back to that being open. I would say be ready. As I've said, you know, I haven't necessarily aspired to any of these things, but I did have that sort of mindset from as a child of I can do whatever I want to do, be open for it, be ready for it. And that means train myself, educate myself, be prepared. That's what I would say.
Excellent. We have just a couple minutes left before we run out of tape on the reel, I suspect. Are there things that you would have expected us to ask or probe a little bit that we haven't?
Let's see. Well, you haven't. I wondered if you wouldn't ask about the, and I referred to it myself once, I think, the female versus the male thing.
Yeah. Please do talk about that a little bit, because obviously we are still in a male-dominated profession, particularly at the senior level, and
right,
you're a bit of a pioneer in that area.
Right. Well, you know, I've kind of said, and I'm really not this old, guys, but I went through college in 3 years, and so I did start out quite young. But, you know, I've always been an anomaly. When I was in those first days at LSU, and you know, we were getting a new IBM 360 computer, 360-65, and I was going to do the systems programming, and I went to training, went to classes. I was the only female in all those classes, you know. So I was at that level then. I was the only female. Now, you know, at that level, I have probably, I haven't counted exactly recently, but I probably have about the same number of males and females that report to me. I have equal numbers of my direct reports. So, you know, I was a pioneer then, sort of continued to be, I guess, along the way, because as you say, there's still not that many female CIOs. I really don't think it makes a difference. You know, I've again been an anomaly, because I've never experienced personally the glass ceiling. I mentioned the three men that I would consider my mentors. Those are the three men who have promoted me or put me, you know, in a position to do what I've done. And it hasn't been women. It's been men. So I've never felt that. So that's definitely been interesting. But I guess what I would say about that, and maybe there's some element of being lucky or being fortunate or being blessed or whatever, but I also, you know, kind of think you make your own bed, so to speak. You make your own place. You exhibit those behaviors and you have those characteristics that, you know, I don't think it matters whether you're male or female. Those are either going to be seen, or if they're not there, then, you know, it's not going to happen. For the most part, I do think that. And I guess I would say, I think for the most part, you know, and I'm just going from my own experience, but men have been more supportive than women. Isn't that an interesting thing to say? Now, one thing I do get really hung up about is this hogwash about, you know, women, girls can't do math, and girls can't do science, and girls can't do computer science, and so forth.
Lawrence Summers isn't on your Christmas card list.
Yes, no. That really bugs me, because that, you know, is just not the case. And I think that, you know, we all need to work on that a whole lot. And I do think that there are probably teachers, and I'm talking women teachers here because that's primarily who's there in elementary school and grade schools, who unfortunately promote that idea too much. But I also think it has to do with the home environment. And, you know, as I said before, my parents, you know, I could do whatever I wanted to do as far as they were concerned. So I think there's a lot of elements at play here, and we've got to do a whole lot. But, you know, women need to be given the opportunity just like men, and it just needs to be out there, and whoever can do the job and is in the right place in the right time needs to have that opportunity to go for it. I guess that's the way I feel.
Based on what you said, Lucinda, does that make you want to reach out more to help developing female leaders?
I guess I want to reach out to developing leaders, period.
Very good.
I guess, Lucinda, that's the honest gut answer. Yeah.
Lucinda, any concluding comments that you'd like to offer to sum it up?
Well, I'm not finished yet, and this is a great run, and I think it's going to be even more exciting in years to come to be in this profession and to be in higher ed in this profession because of some of the things I said earlier. We don't know where it's going, and challenges and opportunities to be creative, to work with people, to, you know, understand the dynamics of this environment is a fun ride, and I would encourage anybody to hop on board at any time.
Very good. Well, you've been generous with your time and really insightful with your comments. So I think what David and I are learning is that we need to go back and rewrite our chapter after we finish talking to all of you. But these will be wonderful comments to complement some of the observations we were able to make in the text. And I really appreciate your time and your willingness to think about some puzzling and very important issues.
Truly a pleasure, Lucinda.
Well, same here, and I really appreciate the opportunity. And, you know, that's another thing I would say. You know, we don't often take time to reflect on some of these things, and so I appreciate the opportunity to just stop and do that for a little bit. That's good, and we all need to do that, I think, more than we do sometimes. So I appreciate that as well, and wish you all luck with the continuation of these, and appreciate what you're doing because it is important for the larger community.
Very good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We'll talk to you soon.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Bye.